Welcome, everybody, to a yet another Face Rocker podcast, number 82. This week, coming at you live, you can probably hear it behind me, from Riverfront Stages. We are on the last week of shooting for our Hulu show. You're going to hear from me and Matt talking about some of the shorts that we've done, some of the things to expect on this show, as well as Ben, the showrunner and awesome show producer, a little bit about their experiences as well. This week's podcast is brought to you by Full Sail University. Thanks very much for supporting the podcast. Sit back. Relax. Have yourself a good time. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another Face Rocker podcast, and a very special Face Rocker podcast at that. This week, coming at you live from the set of our Hulu show, the very last week of our Hulu show. This is a rehearsal day, is what we're doing, Matt and I. And it was a rare thing because we've never actually, in 3 years of video game high school, ever done a proper rehearsal day. Not for any of the car crazy action stuff, not for any of the hand-to-hand combat, although Ellery did pair off with Eric and do a lot of training on that. But for once in our lives, something that we've been pining for our entire careers, we've had the opportunity to sit down on set, the set that we will actually be using with the actors, and to run through the action. Which does make a big difference. We tricked the producers into it.
Because that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to have the set for like a week beforehand because it's a Chaplin-esque show and we're going to figure it out. We don't have the money for that.
No.
So we just sold it to them as 3 days.
Yes, we did. But in fact, we did not need 3 days.
We needed 2 days. So the first day, we're just here rehearsing. That's good.
And I will say that, one, it's great to be able to take a little bit of time off. You may hear in the background the sound of plastic bottles falling. That's the actors working while we, Matt and I, sit here jabbing into microphones. This is a one-take sequence inside what is going to be a black and white 1930s, 1920s, Charlie Chaplin-esque short film. This is kind of your idea, wasn't it, Matt?
It was weirdly originally for Star Wars Day.
Way back.
Yeah,
right?
It was going to be in the cantina. It was going to be like the bartender, like the Death Star plans were stolen and then like dropped off at the cantina, and it turns into this like Chaplin-esque short because the Nerdist had the cantina set.
Oh, that's right.
And yeah, we just thought we would do it. And yeah, it's like a 3.5 minute one shot. And they're, I think the last 30 seconds has like 16 breakaway bottles that they're just smashing on each other's heads. So that's what they're rehearsing now.
What's funny about that is from the get-go for this one, this production specifically, they were saying to you, they're like, Matt, how many breakaway bottles do
it's
we
like
need?
150.
Right. And they would always be like, okay, so like 50?
150.
So like 50?
100 with 100 in front of
and
it.
And we just kept saying like 100, 100. We need 100.
Well, we got down to 100. But that's because it's 100 breakaway bottles, but then we have like 20 breakaway shot glasses and whiskey glasses. So it comes out to about 150, which gives us about 5 takes, assuming we don't break all of them every take.
Yeah. And this one, I think, is a little bit special for you, Matt, because I know you, for as long as I've known you, you've always been a proponent of Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin, the silent films, the short films. And I think that that's something that's, as far as I know, nobody else cares about that. Even in film school. I got to say that. I mean, totally honest. No, but I'm going to be totally honest, though. Mm-hmm. Even through USC film school, nobody actually knew those films as much as you did. And nobody actually seek them out and watch them to any extent whatsoever. And I remember you being jazzed about like the Buster Keaton Blu-ray coming out. I remember being in film school, thinking about back in film school, and being like, man, these movies would play and people would be falling asleep. Mm-hmm. And then you're the only person I know who actually cares about that. And I'm curious why.
I'm actually sad.
But it's just the truth, though.
No, I mean, it's. I think when I watched a lot of movies, and it was when I saw silent films that I kind of realized, like, maybe because they're so simple, I was like, oh, it kind of made sense to me, like, how a movie was made. And a lot of the, like, the silly films I made in high school were, like, kind of silent film-esque films. But, you know, we haven't really done one, and even doing one shows you how hard it is just to figure out kind of basic moments. And I don't know, I think there's a lot of pretension when you're in film school and you kind of like, if you think you see, I always remember there was a kid in film school who was like, oh, like Altman's a terrible director. Like he just places the camera there. I could do that. Because they see it in very tangible details. They're like, oh, that's an easy camera shot. Like I think when you first get into film, like the fancier the camera angle is, like the better you think the directing is.
You're very wooed by long one takes and like big flashy camera motions and fast cutting and rapid cutting.
Yeah. But Chaplin figuring out how to make the blind flower girl in City Lights realize it's a rich guy is harder and a more difficult thing to pull off storytelling-wise than even like the one take in Children of Men or something, which is like one of the most technically advanced things.
And I remember it's funny too, because I remember the first class you take at USC is 290, right?
Yeah.
And 290 forces you to do 5 digital short films.
Mm-hmm.
And the rule is you can't use dialogue in those. And I remember every single one of my peers was like, I need to get around this. How do I get around this? What are the loopholes? Okay, can we have dialogue? What if it was the voice on the end of a phone and the phone is talking the whole time? It's not someone talking. And it's just all this like stuff when I think everybody was missing the point, which is it's much harder to only do things showing just with action, no dialogue.
Yeah.
You know? And in this case, by the way, what we found in the last few days of rehearsal here is that's super true. To be honest here, we didn't come into this one fully baked as much as we probably should have been compared to some of our other shorts.
Yeah, it was because it's the last short we're shooting, 5, one of which was like a horse race with like 4 horses.
Yeah, 5, and there's 8 total.
And I think because we kind of knew we were improvising to a degree and kind of feeling it out with the actors that we're kind of like delaying it for a bit, which is why we needed this day of rehearsal, otherwise we've been kind of screwed. We didn't. Essentially, this weekend, we wrote the script multiple times, but this weekend we really finally sat down, had to bring Josh in to kind of, like, I wanted him to kind of have a take on kind of the character. And frankly, he came up with, like, the very first, like, kind of character beat when you first see him, which is a fun one. It was a little bit like us figuring it out this weekend, a lot of it. And then action choreographer who did Let Him Brawling, I told him, like, hey, there's a sequence near the end. Like, the bartender, he fights all the Nazis. And this is kind of the stuff that needs to happen. You know, go design it.
Yeah.
He sent us, like, 2 different versions of it. And then we kind of, with Clint and Josh, we kind of, like, spliced those two together and came up with the full sequence.
Yeah.
And that kind of became the foundation of it and kind of how to get to that final, like, one take, big sequence.
And I have to say, also the one thing that was interesting about this one was watching the writers just slave over really, really insanely difficult stuff because you couldn't use a word of dialogue to like fix something.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we need to show. I remember like just sitting there, everyone's like, we need to show that he's kind of down on his luck. And it's like, what does he do? What is the thing that we see? And it becomes way harder to try and describe that in just a sheer visual sense than it is if you could have a way of just being like, oh, well, you know, having
people,
someone say.
Yeah, I think people just take for granted. I think why I like silent film so much is that I think the foundation of storytelling is like the most important aspect. And everything else you learn from other people is really just learning people's flavor. And it's learning their like what their voice is, which is useless to you. Like it just means you're mimicking. Like what you learn is the foundational stuff. And very few films now, like a lot of films now, you take a scene and you remove the dialogue and you think about just the actions and the staging that occurs.
Yeah.
It falls apart in like the basics. Like that's the thing. It's like as simple as why does this bartender really need money?
Yeah.
Became an incredibly difficult discussion, which in another movie, you know, you would just like throw out a line of dialogue and fine, it works. But then if you remove that dialogue, it doesn't really work.
Yeah.
And it doesn't become a real thing.
Which is why I think we're such fans of Mad Max.
Yeah.
Because that's a movie. Yes, there are big dialogue scenes, but it's like, it's very clear.
But you need dialogue. Even silent films will use a title card get to a certain point. And even if they're not hearing the dialogue, you know, they're miming and you can understand like, oh, she's angry at him or he is, you know, needing money. Like you get it.
Yeah. After all, that's an expression.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but I think at the end of the day, it's just like the basics of storytelling are most clear and raw when you watch silent films. And that's so much more useful than watching, you know, the latest Fincher movie and being like, oh, that like you're just going to learn how to make a Fincher movie as opposed to like you watch like a 13-minute Buster Keaton short. That's going to teach you a lot more about storytelling.
Yeah, which, by the way, I give a lot of credit even to Peter Jackson
for
being a guy who actually does care about that stuff. And even though everyone hates, I told you the story about King Kong.
Oh, yeah. I'm one of those few people, I love Peter Jackson's King Kong, even for how long it is.
But I have a lot of respect for that movie because the story that I always give is my grandma. Did you ever tell you this?
Yeah. You have no idea how often I use
that.
Somebody's like, I don't like King Kong. I'm like, Peter Jackson's a brilliant, not as much in The Hobbit, but he's one of those brilliant visual storytellers out there.
So my grandma, who doesn't speak a lick of English and hates movies as English movies as a result of it because she can't tell what the hell's going on, we took her to go see King Kong. At the end of it, she was crying because she's like, she understood what was going on because it was such a visual movie. Yeah. You know?
I knew I was into that movie. There was a shot where Naomi Watts goes up to the poster of, like, you know, she might have to become a dancer or whatever.
Right.
It's wordless. It's like four shots, and it perfectly encapsulates. There you go. Story.
Nails it.
And it's completely raining. The dance hall is brightly lit like a heaven, even though it's like clearly not. And she walks up to it, and then it cuts to her light on her face, cut to tears like going down the poster, essentially hers.
Yeah,
sad.
Yeah.
And then reflection of Jack Black behind her. And it's just like, it's one of those things that no line of dialogue, you don't need anything. You know it's this huge step that she's like losing everything, that she's going to take this big leap, and then somebody comes from behind to save, to kind of like present this new opportunity.
Right,
it's kind of in the shadows, and it still foreshadows the fact that like, this might even be worse.
Right.
And it's like, that's freaking great. That's great. And it's not flashy, and it's not cool, and no, the college film student is going to look at that and be like, oh shit, that's like, dude, that blew my mind. But that is more difficult to think of than a flashy shot. Like, to me, that's what always fascinates me. And like, I learned this. I always remember this Ebert review of Minority Report. And it's kind of one of the first things that kind of started clicking in my head of like thinking about the basics. And he was talking about Minority Report and like all this flashy shit that happens in it. And the thing he was most blown away was just when she goes to hide and they hug him and you know, the girl, they're hiding the balloons, they hug and they cross their faces and it becomes a reverse two shot because they're at cross paths with each other.
Yeah.
And it's just such a simple statement and such a simple shot. And it's like that. I started thinking about that way. Oh, like a cleverly composed close up tells you a lot more and is more important than, you know, the coolest lighting effect or anything.
They say pictures worth 1,000 words, but some pictures are worth way fewer thousand than some other ones. And you want to get dense imagery when it comes to filmmaking.
It just feels like in some films they had to work with so much less, and yet their story sometimes functions so much better. Like,
you're looking at the machine. You're looking at the mechanics, as opposed to, it's so easy when you look at movies nowadays to be distracted by the flash and everything above it, you know. So it's like, but this is like, some film is like watching a bicycle, like the gears of a bicycle and how it works, and you're just completely exposed, and you can't be any sort of, it can't be fixed, it can't be glued together or anything. It has to be solid.
So many of those films are so much shorter, and people bring this up all the time. But there's something to be said. Like, I'm like anybody else. Like, I love the Avengers, and I'll take 2 hours and 45 minutes for all that spectacle. But, you know, there's also something said, there's so many blockbusters that they're all over 2 hours, and you can look at like an old, like, not silent, but like even like an old like Lubitsch musical at 72 minutes, and like, it'll tell a tighter, better, more rounded story with more interesting characters and more stuff actually happens in those 72 minutes than like a full bloated 2 hours and 20 minute, you know, Fast and Furious movie. And
which, to be fair,
that's technically impressive. Oh yeah, I love that. Again, there's reasons to have like length and action, but I just wish people were more interested in, like, to me, that's the most interesting thing technically, is like the technical craftsmanship of how do you tell that much in such a short amount of time with so little tools that they did in silent film. So I don't know. I feel like I always try to think back to that stuff.
We've been, and you know, if you guys may note, we're in a somewhat analytical state of mind, because I think partially that's due to the last 4 weeks here on this Hulu shoot. Matt and I have been directing about half of the episodes, but the other three we're not directing at all. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we did five of them. The other three are Ben, Clint, and Ashley, and I don't think we're not dictators, but me and Freddie are very. We're just used to. I think that's why we're both pretty oblivious, and we just ask for things to be done, and it just kind of works.
Yeah.
And it's a very big learning experience to be like essentially repress all of our instincts and watch somebody else direct and just be there to help. When we think they needed help, or kind of, you know, because there's a whole range, you know. Clint's also been doing tons of stuff for a long time, but you know, we kind of gave him a bit of a bigger short, and you know, kind of more money in it, and you know,
more complexity in terms of character development.
Yeah, so you know, we wanted to be there, and you know, Ben's obviously done a lot of stuff, but this was kind of his first like big effects
direction.
And then for Ashley, it was like, you know, she didn't even know she wanted to direct before. We were like, hey, I think you should direct Fan Friction. So like, that was very much like, you know, all the way from like, you know, shot list with your DP first and stuff like that. And then by the second day, we could have just left.
Yeah.
She got so good. But yeah, that was when helping somebody else out makes you think about it even more.
No, but then there's, because then you get way in your head. And you're like, wait, okay, what about this and what about this? Because also what you learn is, you know, it's a nebulous art form still. You know, it's like there's not necessarily wrong decisions. You know, I forgot who said it. There's no such thing as like a bad shot, but there's less interesting shots, mm-hmm. right? And for us, it's also like looking at
We've shot some bad shots. There's definitely bad shots. We've shot bad shots.
But the point being, like, you know, I think that we're sitting there and we started thinking about like, oh, we would do it like this, but it's like, nah, it doesn't. But we don't have to do it that way.
Yeah.
And be okay with the sort of the new way of doing
it.
Yeah,
you try to restrict it to. We try to only butt in if. Two
code
things.
Reds.
One, code red. Like, we're like, this will not work in the edit. Or, like, they just completely, this is, no, you cannot do this. Or somebody's going to get hurt or something.
Yeah.
Code red. Or, more importantly, is if we think they forgot something that they wanted.
That like, we know because we've talked
yeah,
to
yeah,
them
because
so
we've talked
much.
Them through. We were in all the pre-production. And, you know, it can be very stressful on set. And if you haven't done it, it's just one of those things. It's just a muscle. You just learn to start keeping everything in your head. And there's plenty of times where, like, I'd see something and be like, oh, wait, hey, really quick, Clint. Did you want to do that beat? He's like, oh,
yeah,
shit,
yeah.
You're right. Or Ashley, there's this beat in the script. Did you want to lose it or did you want it? Okay, like, those are the only times we try to butt in. I tried not to butt in if I was like, oh, I'd rather. I would have done that shot.
But
I think that's also why you get analytical because we get to, you know, I think even from all three of those directors, like, I learned something because they approach
absolutely.
Things differently. And there was times where I'm like, oh, I would have done that. And then they do something like, oh, you know what? I've never really thought about, like, maybe talking to the actor that way first or like rolling it that way or shooting that
yeah,
way
yeah.
like
or ordering it or the angle
yeah.
for that specific shot, you know what I mean?
Yeah, very analytical. It's probably really dry. It's all probably really boring.
What?
It's,
no, I would hope not. No,
yeah,
no, no.
I would hope not too, but you know.
It's been a crazy month. It's been a weird month too because I think a lot of the stuff that we've been doing is not it's not like the sort of usual rhythm and pace of production that we're used to. You know, it's not like you get into a groove and here's a scene, here's like VGHS was. But in this case, you know, it's like every day we were doing something different. One day we're out in the middle of a super hot Western town and we're working with horses. The next day, Clint and I are up on wires doing stunts like nonstop. And then the next day we're back again. It was all over the place. So it's kind of weird.
Which is kind of like VGHS, but VGHS at least had the consistency of characters. So like we knew we had something going on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think that you know, in the end, these eight shorts that we're doing, which are going to be also available on YouTube for all of you out there, and also while it is going to be on Hulu, and the show is a Hulu show, I'd like to remind people that, yes, we are aware that there are geographical boundaries outside the United States, and obviously there's plans.
The show will come out in other ways.
Yes, the show can come out in other ways, et cetera, et cetera. So don't worry. You will be able to see the show if you don't necessarily have Hulu in your country, so don't worry about it. Everybody's acting like we forgot that there's the rest of the world, so no, that's not the case. You will be taken care of. But the shorts also will be on YouTube. And I think these eight are far and away the eight most interesting, most ambitious ones that we've ever done on the channel. And that's including everything up until this point.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's one or two that are a little bit different, but I'd say at least six of them feel more like complete short films. They're going to be like 7 to 10 minutes long. They're pretty big.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Two other ones are also ambitious, but they're weirder and they're more like sketches.
Yeah, it's funny because like a lot of people are like, because people try and describe what we're doing. It's like, oh, are they sketches? And we're just like, well, they're not really like sketches because they're also weird. They're not like scenes in medias res and then you kind of sort of like have a little, you know, thing there. It's like they're actually complete start to finish short films in a weird way, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what they are.
They're fun comedy action shorts. There's eight of them. We've been doing them for the last month. This is finally our last week. I'm curious, Matt, because you have a lot of stuff that you should be doing in your day-to-day life. What's the first thing you're going to do once we wrap here on Friday?
Actually, sleep. Well, no, I was saying that. I was telling Mike that all my laundry... I'm getting married in...
Oh,
marriage,
right?
Huh?
Laundry.
Laundry.
Horrible.
No, I've done laundry, but, like,
how?
I don't make my wife fold the laundry also.
Oh.
So, like, she's been very nice. She's like, hey, I did the laundry, but you have to fold. I'm like, okay. I never folded it. And then there's also a rule. I can't just stick it in my corner anymore because I've been very bad. So, you know...
Oh,
my wife
isn't actually
house training me correctly.
I actually thought about here's an invention, by the way. If you're a free $1 billion invention for you guys out there, if you can make this work. You know how everyone, when they're done with their laundry or when it's dirty, they throw it in the hamper, right?
Yeah.
They take that thing, they throw it in the washing machine, run through the dryer. But then when you're done, there's the awful process of sorting. And you probably do, I'm guessing, what I do, which is I take it and I just pile it somewhere and then I pull from my clean pile, right?
Yeah, so but the problem is that, long story short, is that my clean pile and my dirty piles have all combined. So the first 10 minutes of my day every morning is just me going like, oh, I'm not even a human. I'm such a disgrace. And just like looking and then just pulling and hoping. Like, this is why this. I was like, okay, I definitely haven't worn this yet. So I'll just wear I know this is clean. And it's just a disaster. Right, so
here it is. It's a hamper that auto-sorts.
What do you mean sort?
Auto-sorts. So it just gives you piles of shirts that are clean.
So you just were like, hey, I got an idea. A time machine. Like
an auto-laundry folder sorter.
And it's in the hamper?
You just throw it in a thing and it gets processed into nice, neat folded piles for you.
Sounds like an incredibly expensive invention.
Hey, I'm just throwing it out there. I'm just saying it'll change the world and everything about it. It'll raise productivity across the globe.
Yeah, I think I just need to fold my clothes.
That's good. I think the first thing I'm going to do is sleep as well. But then E3's next week.
Yeah.
Which we're going to be doing some fun stuff.
Wait, E3's next week?
E3 is next week, my man.
Holy crap. Dude, so much. Sorry, Freddie brought up wedding, and now that's what you did.
Dude, now you're thinking about all that stuff.
So, my
all right. Well, look, we are not the only ones that you're going to be hearing from this week on Face Rocker. Old podcast producer Benji Dolly has sat down with some members of the crew to interview them and ask them a little bit about their experiences here on the Hulu show.
So stay tuned,
and we're going to be right back after a quick little break.
Do you dream of becoming a filmmaker and seek structured curriculum, resources, and state-of-the-art facilities to sharpen your skills and achieve your goals? If so, then Full Sail University has the degree programs to help you do just that. Throughout Full Sail's Film Bachelor's degree program, you'll learn the filmmaking process from start to finish on a campus that houses the technology and resources you need. Full Sail even offers a new film production master's degree program designed to give you an advanced education in all aspects of filmmaking. Full Sail also has you covered if you're looking for online courses. In the online digital cinematography bachelor's program, you'll learn what it takes to write, shoot, and edit your own films. And if you're interested in the writing side of film production, Full Sail has creative writing degree programs at a bachelor's and master's level available to you. Full Sail graduates have worked on films including The Hunger Games, Gravity, Saw, and our very own upcoming series. Visit fullsail.edu/rocketjump. That's fullsail.edu/rocketjump to learn more. We'd like to thank Full Sail University for supporting the podcast. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to the Face Rocker podcast. My name is Ben Waller. I'm showrunner of Rocket Jump : The Show.
I'm Ashton Mahuja, producer of Rocket Jump : The Show. We're taking over from Matt and Freddie. They went back inside and directing today. So we had nothing better to do, so we decided to come chat with you guys.
Why not? They're on the set of Tip Jar right now. I'm sure they gave you the entire story of the short, you know, its influences, why we're doing a 40s spy caper, why it's, you know, black and white, why it's without sound. But that's just like one of the eight that we're doing. I don't know if they got into the other ones much, but, you know, this is a small subset of a huge selection of genres and styles that we're going to be doing on
the
show.
And this is the last one we're filming too.
Yeah. This is the last week of production. We're on day 18 of 20 at this point.
It's been a brutal one.
Yeah.
Been a lot of long hours. A lot of long days. You get to know the crew very well. We become one tight-knit family. So we all kind of start working like a machine. It's been pretty great.
And it's weird, too, because everyone's coming in and out at different times. So, like, production crew is there for the 20 days that you're shooting, but then you might have swing positions that come in for, like, a day or two. So you all these different people all have to function like a team who's known each other forever, regardless of how long they're actually there.
Yeah, it's a fascinating process. And it's been really fun for us learning it while switching hats and switching roles and doing, you know, coming in overtime. I know you and the guys have been coming in on weekends, either setting up GoPros or rehearsing and blocking, pre-vising, which is a crazy intensive process on its own.
Well, it's, you know, Matt and Freddie are directing a bulk of the shorts, so it's like they have to switch gears constantly and enter a new universe and prepare for a new universe. And sometimes these universes are so steeped in things that need to get done that they have to work extra hard on the weekends just to be able to prepare. So like for Tip Jar, they're here last weekend just preparing to rehearse, but then we're still here today rehearsing just because that's how much choreography is involved in a one-take fight scene.
And looking at the difference, last week we were out shooting a Western.
Yeah.
So switching those hats consistently is crazy.
Yeah.
And you have to put in the time to make that change effective.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it becomes a lot harder.
Yeah. It's eight mini feature films in 20 days instead of one feature film in 20 days.
And the ones they're not directing, they're looking over and overseeing.
Yeah. Mentoring, guiding everyone along.
Yeah, absolutely. And doing a fantastic job.
I mean,
these shorts are looking amazing. I cannot wait to show everybody what we've been working on all this time, you know?
Yeah. I like And that's the thing, too, is we brought in other people like Clint.
Ashley.
Punisher.
Yeah.
Ashley Birch of Hey Ash, What You Playing? Her brother, Anthony. Myself.
Tell us about what you directed.
I directed Freddy's Vlog, which is a vlog by Freddy.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, vlogging is really popular on the internet. Freddy gets into it, and, you know, we learn about his life.
What was
we
a little different?
Experience a day in the life of Freddy.
What was a little different about the way we shot that one?
That entire video was shot on a phone. And
on his phone.
My phone. And usually with that kind of stuff, you want to, like, shoot it with a camera and then make the footage look crappy.
Right.
But phones have such a specific aesthetic with regards to the way they auto-expose and
auto-focus.
And they're
so good now, too. It's like... It's not just crappy. I mean, you're still shooting an HD video.
Yeah, it's not crappy. It's just that the lens is only one focal length, so it's trying to autofocus across multiple planes, and you can only get that on a phone. You don't get that from these nice cameras.
Of course not.
They're set up to actually get the image correctly.
Was there a lot of challenge for you shooting on that? Or was it almost freeing in a way?
It was really frustrating for John Salmon, the DP, because he, like, on a, you know, film cameras are made to just go and go and go and go and be ready to shoot at all times, and phones aren't made to run all day for 8 hours. So, like, just the phone would just be doing weird things throughout the day that John and myself had no idea what was going to happen. So it was very risky.
Sure.
It was really risky to do
that. Looks like
the risk
paid off, though, for us, right?
It turned out okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. One thing that I've loved as a producer has given me the biggest headaches is that there is not a short that we've done that doesn't have a stun or an explosion or some kind of a thing that makes my brain go crazy. What was the biggest headache for you?
My only headache is making you feel better. I still get to see all these
explosions.
Which is
explosions. A big challenge. So can I say what mine was?
Yeah.
Flipping a goddamn bus. That was hard. And the thing, what was fascinating about that for me is that it wasn't that hard to do. Like, we figured out. No, hold on.
In the moment? Like, are you saying in the moment?
No, not in the moment. I'm, like, talking about planning it. Like, we literally called a guy. He's like, yeah, this is how you do it. You want to do it? How big's the bus? This big. Okay, I can do it.
Well, yeah, when they demonstrated to you with little matchbox cars, you're like, are we doing this?
Yeah.
Is this right?
And we did it. We flipped the bus vertically, and it just flew and just landed on its backside. Not its backside. It did a full 360.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Yeah. And I was just really worried we were going to just destroy a building, because a bus flying through the air hitting a building, that's some damage.
Yeah, buses aren't made to be aerodynamic.
No, they're not. So I was worried, but the feeling that I don't know about anybody else, but as soon as that bus landed and I saw nobody got hurt and nothing got hurt, I was elated.
Yeah.
I hadn't had a feeling of that pure, like, adrenaline in a long time.
That was an incredible feeling. Yeah. It was like the sun was setting and we were right on the
setting,
water.
We had
it was the last thing we were doing that day.
That
was pretty sweet.
It was really fun. And what I loved about
that was like the first thing we were shooting.
It was the first two. It was the second day. It was day two.
It was a good note to start on.
It was the best note. I mean,
and Josh wasn't there, so we didn't have to deal with.
Yeah, that was this guy behind us is a pain in all of our butts. Just kidding. He makes everything better. But I mean, even that.
Josh is gonna set the set on fire.
Yeah, really. But since then, I mean, like, after a bus, we've done. All kinds of crazy things.
We've
done hand-to-hand combat. We've done horses. We've done explosions.
Wire rigs, wire poles.
Wire rigs. Dare I say lightsaber fights.
Yeah.
We've done
lightsaber
so many
fights
things.
Ultimately, what a lightsaber fight boils down to is two guys hitting sticks into each other.
It
looks so much
lame,
cooler.
Ben Waller.
It looks so much cooler once you actually
put
the
point.
Effects in.
I know. But I mean, anyway, regardless, it's all going to look so cool.
Yeah.
What are you most looking forward to? Like, final product, after effects are in. Not about the stress of actually putting it together.
Yeah.
But once it's all done and we get to just show it to our fans.
I don't know. I think Jess's Big Date is really cool because it's a bunch of action. And it's like a story around the action, and a lot of times... What's motivated some of our videos in the past has been the action itself rather than the story leading into the action.
And what's cool that our viewers might notice or not notice, we're actually using the same set for Tip Jar for Jess's Big Date. So you can try and catch some of the similarities.
Yeah.
Our department did a pretty great job making sure you're not being able to tell the difference, though.
Yeah, Bonnie is an amazing production designer and just killed it.
Word up to Bonnie.
What up, Bonnie?
Yeah. While we've been doing all these shorts, and of the 50 people here, 47 of them are working on the shorts.
Yeah.
How has it been creating a documentary around this at the same time?
Usually on on BT on a shoot, there's always a BTS component, and depending on who it is, it's either more involved or less involved. So,
and you've done a lot of that, right?
Yeah, we did that with Rocket. Oh, sorry. We did that with Rocket Jump 2,
Catering's
Freddy
really
W
good.
2 before that, you know, and Nathan Kep, our story producer, came out of that whole system with me. I mean, I did it before Nathan. Nathan took over and worked on film school with Lauren, and then now he's doing story producing on this. Mm-hmm. And depending on the set, BTS can be something that everyone just kind of blows off and ignores or participates with. And Rocket Jump is very used to having BTS around and sort of playing it up for the camera. But in this specific instance, it wasn't just about playing it up for the camera. It was, you know, there's the short, yes, but then we still have to make a television show around the short. So just as much as the short is going to be on TV, the documentary portion is going to be on
TV. It's going to have as much or more screen time.
Yeah.
Most likely more. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
And so it's been a huge challenge figuring out those stories, getting stuff that looks good. You know, keeping Nate and Alan and Armin sane so that they can function to the best of their abilities.
While figuring out these stories, what have been some of your influences while like thinking of not just what you're filming, but how you're going to use it and to tell a story, how you're going to edit it together? What have been some of your influences?
I mean, the show is always, originally it started sort of being modeled off of Hard Knocks on HBO, which is like inside summer camp with a football team. And it wasn't about the fact that, you know, there's high stakes and you could not make the team or something. It was that you're showing these people in a very, what some might call relaxed environment because it's just camp and practice.
It's not like a reality show.
It's but you're seeing them, you know, function in something that they love to do, that they're super passionate about, and you get to see it portrayed in a really cinematic and epic way. And I thought, you know, no one's ever done that for filmmaking. It's always like people sitting there and being like, well, we made this doing this, and, you know, hopefully the show can kind of make what's happening behind the scenes as important and interesting as what's in front of the camera.
Totally. One thing that I found cool and have loved working with Rocket Jump is as we've gotten bigger, everyone's roles have gotten bigger too. Just finding people to do that job.
Yeah.
So like you said, with Nate and with Alan, yourself, everyone's done smaller jobs like this.
Yeah.
And now we're on a
leading
different level
it.
And doing it together.
And it's, I think all the next step.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's
like
great that we're
able
to do it together.
Producing the shorts like London Brawling and every 90s commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just like, okay, well, you're the producer, so let's just produce the television show
and
now, right? That's not any more difficult.
No, it's
than
all it's the same
short.
Thing, right?
That's the exact same
it's
thing.
It's the exact same thing. 30-minute
totally
episodes.
Woo. No. What? 180 minutes?
But what makes it so
hours?
Much fun is the family that we've built around ourselves,
yeah,
you know? Because at the end of the day, the money you work with, the size you work with, doesn't matter when you have...
As long as
that's
you have good people.
Core.
Yeah.
It's the core, you know?
It's having those people around and having a shorthand with your crew so that you can accomplish what you need to, which is why you see a lot of the similar actors too,
because
it's like at a certain point, yes, you can depend on good acting, but not only do we have amazing actors, we have people who've worked with repeatedly who understand our directing style and can instantly...
It's one of the few things that's made producing two shows at once a little easier, because everything else has been a colossal challenge.
Yeah.
Well, what's been the hardest thing for you to like
think
focus?
About that. You're doing two shows at once instead of one.
Yeah. No, and not just that. We're doing two shows at once, and in one of those shows, it's eight complete different shorts.
Yeah.
Because usually,
and then the other
know,
is just a documentary.
Usually with this size of a say a feature shoot, you're dealing with the same five actors, the same five or six locations, the same look.
Nope.
Here we're doing eight completely different looks with mostly the same crew, but oh my god, how different the creatives are.
Yeah.
And we've been recycling actors here and there, but overall, it's a very, very different feel every single day.
And it's kind of a testament to everybody because they can adapt. You know, like people might be horror fans, therefore they work on horror films or work within that genre, but it's like you can't only be limited to one genre on
the
show.
No, of course not.
Everyone
to. We've reached almost, you know, a lot of the big genres on the show.
Yeah.
I mean, and if not the full genre, like alluded to, inspired by.
Well, it was really a shorthand in the writer's room to get us into the ideas we wanted to make.
Sure.
And then we kind of told the story from there.
How's that been seeing what you spent months writing come to life?
I don't know. I don't know. It's weird because, you know, on the shorts, it's like you just write one and then a week later or 2 weeks later, it's good to go.
Sure.
And now it's like you write one and then 2 weeks later, you're like, oh, this is shit. And then another 2 weeks later, you're like, oh, wait, no, this is good. And then another 2 weeks, like, this sucks. And then another 2 weeks, you're like, wait, no, we can fix it. And you just keep doing that back and forth until you finally land on something that's awesome, or at least something that's ready to go
right
when you actually are supposed to shoot.
But I'm sure seeing it executed, though, is so fulfilling.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, look, you can't really take it's not like anyone's taking ownership over any of this stuff, you know?
No.
So it's like when you see it executed, it's just like,
but it
damn.
But doesn't mean you can't feel fulfilled.
No, you can totally.
You know,
I
that joke. I thought that was a really cool idea.
But that's not
why
you do it.
No, of course not. But it's still fulfilling.
You do it because you want, you know, you have stuff that you want to, jokes you want to make and stories you want to tell. And
totally.
You know, everyone comes together to do it, which is cool.
I have a guess, but what's your favorite day on set so far?
I like Freddy's vlog. I'm biased.
No, which day?
Which day?
Uh-huh.
Oh, the freaking jungle day.
Yes, I knew it. That was my guess.
It's jungle day. Chris was there.
Yeah, he was. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I got to be a chief for a day.
Asham was a chieftain.
Yep.
What was your favorite?
That was fun. My favorite, I think, might have been just the bus day. No, yeah. That was too stressful today.
That was a month before. Like,
I know,
what about in this
true.
Recent?
Okay.
In the newest slate.
In the newest slate, wow! I mean, we've done so many different things. I think one I was most proud of was Fan Fiction.
Yeah.
Because A, it looked amazing, and B, we got off about a week's worth of shots in a day.
Yeah.
And I will always hold that as an ego thing. Like, yeah, I don't know about your shoot. We did 120 shots in a day.
Yeah.
So shove it. Like, it's impressive. We did something pretty amazing.
Yeah. Our script supervisor, our continuity guy.
Yeah.
As you might call him. he was like, I've never seen this much done in one day. He like couldn't believe it.
That was crazy. So coming from that kind of run and gun style that we're used to, you know, Rocket Jump being shorts on YouTube, doing a 5-man cruise and stuff.
Yeah.
What's it been like for you working with like Lionsgate and Hulu as a partnership creating the show?
It's been really cool. I mean, I hope I don't say anything like that I'm under NDA about or something, but like it, you know, you they're really good partners, and they kind of have allowed us to do whatever we want creatively.
Yeah.
It's you know, Lionsgate was like, this sounds cool, and they took us to Hulu with them, and we pitched it to Hulu, and who was like, this sounds cool. You know, we sent scripts off. I mean,
we didn't get any notes on scripts, right?
No.
They just said, okay, cool, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
They're just like, sweet.
I was really expecting censorship notes and all that kind of stuff. They're like, yeah, let's do it.
You think working with like a TV network, like there's going to be all these things in place, like safety measures, and we haven't had any of that. Like the only limitations we've had have been production ones.
Yeah.
In terms of the usual stuff, budgets, or time, or whatever.
What I feel is awesome is that they get it. They get what we're trying to do, and they want us to do us. And they support you know?
Yeah,
they know.
The show is never about, like, trying to fit into another mold. It's just, like, just put Rocket Jump in front of a different audience.
Yeah, a bigger audience.
Yeah.
And not excluding all of our loyal fans, just kind of bringing them to the next level with us as we keep being able to do bigger and better things. It's kind of fun. A lot of fun. Yeah, I think that's all the time we have. I think I hear my name being called on set. What about you? Any last words for them?
Yes. So, that is all the time we have.
Those are the last words. I was going to say big thank you to Full Sail University for sponsoring this podcast.
Definitely.
We've had a great time talking to you guys. Cannot wait to share all these amazing shorts
and
episodes.
You know, just hang out on the website and check our Twitters and stuff. Like, there will be, we're leaking things out slowly. I think more so than ever, we're very aware of, you know, how much information to share and how much information to hold back. And we'll be teasing constantly until you're watching the thing on your TV, basically. So, you know, just stay tuned. There's going to be a lot of really cool, really interesting stuff.
Get excited, guys. It's going to be a fun one.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Benji Dolly, podcast producer. Thank you also to Full Sail University for supporting the podcast. Stay tuned. Next week, we're coming at you live from the greatest nerd event. Well, that's probably not true. Not anymore. But anyway, we're coming at you live from E3. Everyone wants to go to E3. We're going. We're going to give you a little bit of our take on what's going on the show floor. See you next week, everybody.